Welcome to the Inux Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we have a special guest here. We're going to do 16 questions of the AFC here with Pat Fitzmaurice. So, Pat, thanks for joining me. We do a home and home usually in the springtime, so this is the return version of it. We did a podcast a couple of weeks ago. You can go check that out. I was in Vegas and you were in Vegas, so got Vegas under our belts and everything. So it's been good. It's been a good month, and now we got some of this sort of looking into the off season. So the idea is basically one question for each team, right? Thinking about the off season, what do you have in terms of, let's just start with Buffalo. We'll work right down the AFC and through the divisions.
Well, I'm a big, first of all, thanks for having me on, Jordan. Always appreciate doing the home and home with you. Good time. Is Buffalo going to add another running back to that mix? And maybe the more intriguing one for me, like I'm really fascinated with Khalil Shakir. I liked him as a prospect coming out of Boise State, and I would like to see him as the permanent number three receiver in that offense. And I'm curious about whether that's going to happen. There's not a lot for the Bills to potentially add in free agency, and I don't envision them spending an early pick on a wide receiver. So I think the door is kind of open for Shakir. I think he's better than Isaiah McKenzie, and that's a player I'm kind of interested in trying to add to my dynasty teams in the offseason.
Oh, I like it. I like it. I think it's like a foregone conclusion they need a what receiver. It's more difficult than that. It's more difficult than just the Bills need to add a wide receiver. Like, sure. But like they don't just like hand them out at Walmart. You know what I mean? Like you have to A, find one, B, be able to afford them, and C, him actually succeed. Like it's not this, everyone's like ragging on Gabe Davis. And I'm like, it's not the most easy thing in the world. Like Baltimore has drafted two in the first round in the past 5 years, and they haven't succeeded like landing a true one. You know what I mean? So like this isn't, and so I'm with you on that being interesting. Do you think in terms of, let's just say, day two pedigree, or high price free agent, what odds would you put on that going to as a running back to Buffalo?
Oh man, you would probably have a better feel for this one than I would, Jordan, being a, I know you're a Bills fan. They had that opportunity last year and they bypassed it, but they did wind up getting, James Cook with a fairly major investment in draft capital. So I don't see them going for one in the first round. Although if somehow Bijan Robinson slides to them, I think they might pull the trigger there, but I don't think he's going to slide that far. So I kind of, and I if they do that, like I think you can pull good running backs out of this draft on day three. Like I think this draft is like has 20 to 25 running backs who are at least interesting dart throws. So I think they can add to the room without making a major investment in draft capital. And they probably have a few other minor holes to patch that are more important to them. But I suspect they will draft one running back. I just don't know if it's going to be before day three.
Got it. Miami.
Miami, Tua's future. Like this guy could be one concussion away from possibly forced retirements. And I think we had to be encouraged by what we saw from him. I mean, going back to 2022 fantasy draft season, Tua was still a big question. People just didn't know whether he could play. And even the addition of Tyreek Hill wasn't necessarily boosting people's confidence level to the degree where they were aggressively drafting Tua, like in redraft. So I've got him on a couple of dynasty teams, and like I'm kind of terrified, to be totally honest with you. Like, I don't know whether I can count on him in a super flex dynasty league to be a, one of my guys going forward. I had there been no health concerns, I'd be supremely confident. But the health thing is terrifying.
Yeah, I'm with you. I heard him interviewed this week, and I was just like, well, at least he sounds good. you know, but you never know. And he was like talking about his son, you know, he's talking about his son and all these things. And I was like, well, at least he sounds good. But then you start again, you come back to how, like, I don't know what happened. Like, they say no concussion. Like, I guess I believe them, but like, it was horrifying to watch that happen in what, a 5-day, 4-day span, whatever it was. And then again, the second one, like, I'm with you. I think this one looms large in terms of his health. Quarterback 12, according to Fantasy Calc and Dynasty rankings right now. Just, that's wild. All right, I'm with you on that one, by the way. I think running back's also an interesting watch in that offense. All right, Patriots. What's your biggest question this offseason regarding the Patriots?
Do they give Bailey Zappe a chance to unseat Mac Jones? And it's interesting. There's so many, like, quarterback issues in the AFC. You know, you've got the halves with Mahomes, Burrow, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, obviously. And then all these other teams that are, like, trying to, you know, get themselves in a position where they can challenge the halves at quarterback. And, you know, Mac Jones, I don't think has been a disappointment thus far. Maybe he didn't make the year two leap that people were hoping for him. But then Bailey Zappe comes in. It was against my Green Bay Packers when he is forced into the game and looked pretty good and almost engineered an upset in Lambeau Field. And, you know, I think a lot of people thought Zappe had too much of a pop gun arm to play in the NFL and, you know, dismissed these circus numbers he put up in college. But I thought he actually looked pretty good, and his decision making and ball placement were certainly NFL caliber. So I'm curious if he gets a chance. I don't know if they would go so far as to declare it an open competition, but I feel like there's a non-zero chance that Bailey Zappe is the Patriots week one starter in 2023.
Do you think there's a non-zero chance that they trade Mac Jones?
Boy, I think it's pretty close to zero. I think they're going to keep him around. I would be pretty surprised if they went and did that, especially since they're just not positioned to really, I don't know, unless there's maybe like a dark horse fifth quarterback who emerges in this draft class behind Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, and Will Levis.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the Patriots would be positioned to take anyone like that. I don't think they're going to sign Derek Carr or someone else. I kind of think it's just going to be Jones and Zappe.
Okay. All right. The Jets.
What to do with Elijah Moore, what Elijah Moore's value is. I just don't know. You know, I was very pro Elijah Moore coming into this season. I wondered if, you know, maybe he would be the number one guy ahead of Garrett Wilson. Well, clearly he's not going to be the number one guy. Garrett Wilson is pretty special. So what does that leave for Elijah Moore? Plus, there was some acrimony with the team. Do they maybe look to move on from him? yeah, I mean, like, and I just, like, I don't know how good he is. We saw it in a short spurt from him in his rookie season, where, like, over a 5-week span, he was like the wide receiver 2 in PPR. So I think there's evidence that he can be a very good NFL wide receiver, but we just have not seen a convincing body of work to really back it up. And he is a hard assessment for Dynasty. I don't even know what sort of, if I was trying to move on from Elijah Moore, Jordan, I'm not sure what sort of draft pick I would be asking for him.
So that's a good question. So I, in season, I think it was the week that he got benched, right? Wasn't there a week that he was made inactive? It was like, I think, yes, the week after that. And I needed help at wide receiver on a team that was contending. And I traded him for Tyler Lockett. And I was like, not my problem anymore. I was like, I don't know what the history of guys that are being, like, benched for, like, you know, DNP CD, like, and not coach's decision, like, in like week 6, what the hit rate on that is, but it's pretty low. Like, I can't imagine that's particularly high. And so I was like, I'm good. And now, like, he's I think it's an interesting spot with him. Like, he's at wide receiver 45 at over at fantasycalc.com. And like, the guys in front of him, Tyler Lockett's in front of him, 41, Sutton, 42, 43, Gabe Davis, 44, Darnell Mooney, 45, Elijah Moore. And then right behind him is 46, Donovan Peoples-Jones. And then they have a 2023 second round pick right in there as well. So I would take, would you take a second for him? Like, if you could get it right now?
201 to 204, I would take.
Yeah.
I think I would just take that immediately. 205 to 207 is kind of a maybe, and I don't think I'd take anything low in the second round.
Got it.
Thinking about the wide receivers who might be there in the latter part of the second round for a rookie draft, like Jalen Hyatt's, maybe Josh Downs type guys. I don't know whether I would rather have someone like that than Elijah Moore. Kind of a close call. I mean, I think there are some people who would rather take one of those rookies, but, you know, again, he did have that wide receiver two run briefly in his rookie season with Mike White at quarterback for most of that. So I'm still intrigued, but I think I would probably cut it off at about 206, 207. Anything lower than that, I think I'd probably just hold on to Elijah Moore.
Seems like the wrong time to sell him too, right? Like, if Rodgers comes out of this hibernation, whatever he's doing, we're recording this the day after the Super Bowl, by the way. So if something happens, don't kill us. This will probably come out end of the week. Or Sunday, probably, one of the two. If Rodgers comes out of hibernation and says, I want to go to the Jets, right? That's what Solitude has revealed to me. Elijah Moore is going to go ahead of Kadarius Toney. He's probably going to go ahead of, like, Juju Smith-Schuster, I would imagine. Like, he probably should go ahead of, like, Ridley. Like, already he's up in, like, to the mid-30s, right? Or, like, that's what I think would happen. Right. I mean, do you think that's a fair, like, it seems like he has a bunch of pretty low hanging fruit to climb over to jump eight spots in valuation, like, in a month, if Rodgers or Derek Carr, more Rodgers, I think, but if they got an upgrade that the dynasty community really liked.
Yeah. It would be probably a bad time to sell now before what would be a perceived boost, maybe an actual boost, but definitely a perceived boost in his value with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. So I think we probably want to wait and see if there's maybe, a little more, a little fire coming from all the smoke we're getting on Aaron Rodgers to the Jets. And, I saw another report this morning that the Jets have reached out to the Packers, I think. So, I think we want to wait for that before we pull the trigger on any Elijah Moore deals, if you're an Elijah Moore stakeholder.
Got it. I'm with you. I think that's good timing. You know, we can sort of do the right profile bet, but timing that is sort of becomes a little bit of the art. All right. What do you think about Baltimore?
Oh, so many questions with this team, Jordan. I don't even know where to begin. So maybe one is, I can't get a read on the value of J.K. Dobbins, and I don't know what that offense is going to look like next year with Greg Roman no longer around as the offensive coordinator. And everyone seems to like J.K. Dobbins more than me. And I thought he was a fantastic, he tore apart my Wisconsin Badgers on multiple occasions with the Ohio State Buckeyes. I don't know if he's that same type of guy anymore. It kind of concerned me that he comes back from the injury. He has some big games, but like on some of these long runs, he's like visibly limping at the end of long runs or running with this like sort of weird gait. Is he not physically whole? Will he ever be physically whole? He went through such a devastating knee injury. Is there hidden upside as a pass catcher that we have not seen in Greg Roman's offense? So I have a lot of questions about him. I personally don't have him on any of my dynasty teams as of now, and I'm not really looking to go out and get him, but I would not know quite how to assess his value if I were a J.K. Dobbins investor.
So one of the interesting things to me about Baltimore has been for a while in the Greg Roman era, in the Lamar Jackson era, has been just how little value their running backs actually have. And that might seem totally counterintuitive. 32nd in routes per dropback, 32nd in targets per dropback, 32nd receptions per dropback, 32nd receiving yards per dropback. Like, just, they just hemorrhage in the passing game. And then when you start looking at some of the expected point stuff, 30th, they were, 31st in expected points per game, PPR points per game, according to PFF. Like, that's bad, right? So even if Dobbins is like excellent, like even if he's like a, he's like, I think his range of outcomes is like a lesser version of Nick Chubb, right? Like, that's kind of the space with which he operates. And even Chubb has kicked in, like, yeah, it's not a ton of receiving stuff, but he was essentially splitting with Hunt this past year. And like, it's not, you know, it's not a ton, but it's enough. Like, you know, they were, and yeah, they were ranked 16th in expected points per game at the running back position. So, yeah, it's just, it seems like, it's funny to me because, and it's always a cautionary tale with, like, when we look at draft classes and people get so excited. People have been excited for 2023 since like 2020. And then now everyone feels disappointment because the class isn't what everyone hoped it would be, or it doesn't appear that it's going to be. And I find that funny. I was like, well, this is just becomes the best opportunity then, right? Because then people sour on it and we could just buy discounted profiles and just do it that way. But it's funny because you go back to that Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins, Akers, Swift class, and Dylan was in that second round too. And you're like, okay, well, Taylor finishes running back one, but what else do we have from what else was supposed to be an elite running back class? Like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, you know, nominally like hit, but he's fallen off the radar after 3 years. Like, Swift was playing as a running back three for extended periods of time this year. Like, Akers, I'm not sure how I feel about Akers. Dobbins, again, the injuries and where are, like, it's just really, I think that class is a very cautionary tale on like, hey, we can get really excited about a class, but still the base rate of those guys hitting is like 55% to 60%. Like, and we have to be kind of careful about it. And that's a, that Clyde Dobbins like totally represents that to me.
Yeah. And obviously dynasty leagues predominantly are full point PPR. And, you know, you mentioned the receiving numbers for backs under Greg Roman and how just non-involved they are. But it's not a skill that J.K. Dobbins completely lacks. And we saw it at Ohio State. Like, there was some pass catching there. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be Austin Eckler, but he can catch. And like, if they tap into that, maybe there is a level of value that he has not yet reached to this point. But and yeah, like, I don't think he sucks, but I'm a little worried about, you know, whether maybe the knee injury sapped a little bit of his ceiling.
Yeah, I'm with you. And like, you combine that with like, it's a tough spot to be in. Like, that I'll like, I was looking at some stuff just this week, like the 13 through 24 range of the running back position is like kind of grotesque right now. Like, he's at 17 and it's like, wow, I don't really love him, but I was like, do I like Alvin Kamara more? Do I like Aaron Jones more? Do I like Damian Pierce? Like who am I gonna, like, he sits there and it's like, okay, like, it's almost inertia. Like, he sits there because you're like, all right, like, who do I want to move? Like, I don't have a ton of confidence moving anyone above him. He's in a really interesting, I guess maybe the big takeaway from that is get the hell out of that range. Like, don't, like, don't pick favorites in that range. Pick ones cheaper than that and trade, you know, and package him and move him up would sort of be the thought there. But yeah. All right. Next one. We've got the Cincinnati Bengals.
Boy, this is a tough one because they're maybe a little more stable than most offenses. But right now, I would probably, I guess I'm most curious about what they decide to do as an organization with T. Higgins, who they are going to have to, you know, I think this is going to be 2023, the last year of his contract.
Yep.
Are they able to re-sign him for big money? Doubtful, perhaps, with the investments that, you know, they're going to be making in Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. Do they look to trade him now? And, you know, if so, who are some potential partners? And what does it mean for T. Higgins' value? Even though he is playing with one of the best passers in the game, as a T. Higgins shareholder, I kind of would like to see him go somewhere else and get a chance to be a number one receiver, because I think he is potentially a true number one difference-making top 10 receiver, and he probably can't quite get to that point with Ja'Marr Chase, sharing the ball with Ja'Marr Chase and, you know, Tyler Boyd too, some other pretty good pass catchers. So what the Bengals do with T. Higgins is my big question with them.
I'm with you. Like, the fit of, like, it's really nice to have an elite quarterback, elite wide receiver, and an elite running mate. Like, that's an, like, that's outstanding. It costs a lot of money to do that. Like, that is an extremely expensive investment. And yeah, they have some cap space, right? They do have like almost 36 million this year. Like Mixon, like they could free up some more by cutting Mixon. Mixon's their third biggest cap hit this year. Like they can move some money around. Like they could extend Burrow now and, you know, use some of that on him and try to save it in future years or whatever. But ultimately, like in 2 or 3 years, like it is a lot to pay those guys. And I almost wonder if it, like, and we've seen it, like we've seen it not work. Like we've seen it have a really, like it's really like the most, I thought the most innocuous statement that anyone made this week that everyone got all fired up about was like Eric DaCosta, the Baltimore GM, came out and said, listen, if we re-sign Lamar, it's going to be really hard to afford a elite wide receiver to go with him. Like they don't just grow on trees, kind of like we talked about before. And when they do, they're really expensive. Like we have finite resources. And then everyone was like, well, you should have drafted some. I was like, they did. They just met. Like if Bateman was, I don't know, if Bateman was T. Higgins, like we wouldn't be having this conversation with them. You know what I mean? Like if Bateman was, has, you know, turned out to be a good player, like they still have a problem at wide receiver too. But when you have an elite tight end and you want to run the ball a lot, like, you can masquerade for that stuff. The problem is Bateman didn't hit. The problem is that Marquise Brown probably wasn't what they, you know, I thought that was a dubious decision when they made it, right? You never want to be on the wrong side of like, hey, all the good teams are doing one thing, let's do the opposite. Like that seemed like all the good teams are trading for wide receivers and paying a lot for them, and we're going to let someone that we got cost controlled walk out the door. It didn't make a lot of sense when they did it. And then they drafted an interior offensive lineman. Like that seemed dubious when they did it. But the premise is right. And then you sort of bring it back to Cincinnati. Like we've seen it, like Kansas City couldn't afford Hill, Kelsey and Mahomes. Like it's just too much money. Like they just paying too much. And that's on a tight end contract, which is less than what T. Higgins is going to make. Like you've seen it again. You've seen it with Dallas, right? Like it's really hard to pay Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper. Like it's really hard to do that. And so they trade them. You know, it's hard. These things are difficult to fit. And then you already have, like, I almost wonder if it sort of encourages Joe Burrow's like worst, like kind of leans into some of his worst, like his darker angel, like his darker demons. It was like, hey, let's stand in here and, you know, do we want to put a quarterback that loves to stand in the pocket and just take hits? Do we want to like add the playmakers and pay all the playmakers and strip offensive linemen from blocking front, like, and not be able to pay offensive linemen, right? Is that a decision right that we want to make? Like, that doesn't seem like the best allocate. Like that doesn't seem like protecting your best asset. I don't know. Like it's like, I'm with you on the T. Higgins thing. I think he's more likely traded than not, because you just, it's really, and the markets, like the AJ Brown deal is going to be like, he'll get that. Like, they'll get what they got from him. What did they get? A first and a third, I think, or something like that for AJ Brown.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So they got, yeah, they got 18 and 101. So like, 101, not 101, 101. I got to be careful when I say that in a dynasty podcast. You know, so it's just expensive. Like, and they're going to have to, like, the Mixon, you know, and like they still have needs and stuff too. And, you know, they've got free agents. Like, it's an interesting offseason for them. And I wonder, yeah, like, is Burrow going to be like, Burrow can take this turn where it can either be Mahomes or you kind of get the rookie deal benefits. And then do you kind of take this leveling off? Like, that's additive. Like, that helps him. And then you sort of take, not the training wheels, like, that's dismissive, but you take some of the rocket fuel out of the offense and you become Mahomes, who can overcome that, or do you become Dak Prescott, who becomes a little bit more variant because he doesn't have the, like, he doesn't have the wind at his back that you do when you have all these playmakers on a rookie deal. Like, it's a really interesting question that I think, you know, Burrow's really, I think he's safe, but I think this offense could go through changes and we'll see. So,
yeah, they already made that wide receiver over offensive line decision when they took Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone is second guessing the wisdom of that decision. But then they did have to sort of go and, you know, make repairs to the offensive line the last offseason. You know, you lock up T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase with these rich long term deals and suddenly you're inhibiting your ability to, like, maintain a defense that was maybe sort of the unsung, underrated part of that team this year. And it's going to be pretty hard to keep a top level defense if you're pouring that many resources into your passing game.
Absolutely. And there's a chance they lose their defensive coordinator. Like there's changes, you know, like, that's the benefit of, like, it becomes the winner's curse, right? You start having to pay guys and you have to, like, it becomes, you have a lot of good players, so you got to pay them. You got a lot of coaches and people want them. And it's an interesting thing. My question for the Cincinnati offseason, more than T. Higgins, more than Mixon, more than the contracts, more than all that, I will, for like, every day I think about the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm just going to think about the Cincinnati mayor. Like, that, I want to know, like, what he's feeling on any given day. Like, I can't wait to, like, I would pay a lot of money to sit and watch the parade with that guy, like the Kansas City parade when they have their parade after the Super Bowl. Like, I can't, that's so funny. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure he didn't love getting called out by Travis Kelce on national television after the AFC championship game. That was probably not his shining moment.
Hey, don't, like if you want the smoke, like, you better, like, when the winds turn, you better be ready to bring that sucker. all right, Cleveland.
What is Deshaun Watson's performance level now? A top five fantasy quarterback in his three full seasons as a starter in Houston. Does he still have that ceiling, or is he just a different guy now after so much time off?
Yep. I think that's exactly right. Like, I don't think there's, you know, how that turn, a full off season. Like, one of the things I looked at the history of guys that had, like, taken off, like, extended time. We'll have to add Geno Smith to that list of research. But if you looked at it, like, it was kind of like it was either really one of two things. They came back and started playing basically the way they did, like, when they left, like Mike Vick, like, there's some other guys in there. There's actually a surprising sample of guys that missed extended time. Tannehill was one. Like, there was some guys that missed some extended time going back, you know, this century. And then, so it was either, like, they came back and kind of were exactly what they were, or it took them like a month. I think the thing that I missed on, that I maybe miss, so I was sort of bullish on Watson, and I'm still bullish on Watson, because I think, like, I don't think that goes away. And I don't think being an elite quarterback, like, the best bet you can ever make in like this century is elite quarterbacks stay elite for a long time. Like, and I think that he's sort of that. I think the thing maybe I mispriced and as a risk factor was trying to come in week 13 and do that. Right. Like it's different than you get a full off season, you get a full training camp, you get all of that, and then you roll into week one. Then you get a full off season, you get a full training camp, and then we'll see you in November. Right. Like that's a very different, and you like he did get some practice time, like he could be back into building and stuff, but it's still different in terms of a momentum of your season. Like it's a tough thing to sort of expect of a quarterback. So I'm with you. I'm still bullish on him, and I think he's priced right where like you take that swing, right? Like if you take the swing and you miss, it's not going to kill you, but if you take the swing and you hit, like it can really make a difference from where, like he's very capable of making a difference from quarterback 10, 11, 12, where he's going off in drafts right now. So
yeah. Would you rather have him or Tua?
Him.
So would I.
I'd rather have Watson. Yeah, I'd rather have Watson. Because I think it would be a shocking development if he, to me, like just when you look at player profiles, it would be a shocking development if he isn't good again. Like that would be like Tua was good this year, but it's 1 year. Like we've got basically like four or five seasons of like elite play from Watson. Like I think you said three top five finishes, and he was on pace in his rookie season to do it as well, and then he got hurt. Like the stuff he was doing as a rookie, like people forget he was over Mahomes for a period of time.
Incredible.
Like,
yeah,
it was a real debate. And I mean, he was like, it was like rookie quarterbacks don't come in and do this. It was that type of performance. And like, I don't think that goes away. Like, I don't, in your mid 20s, like it doesn't, I don't know. I'll make that bet. Like I'm fine. I'd much rather take that bet than take, the Tua bet or someone else like in that range, because like we've seen it. Like, I think you bet on, especially when you can bet on elite players at a discounted price, I think you almost have to do it. Like that's the market baiting you to do it. And I'm fine sort of swinging and missing from there if that happens. All right. What do you think with Pittsburgh?
Well, I'm going to revisit a guy we talked about on my show, Jordan. George Pickens, what is the ceiling for this guy? And, we talked about sort of the dilemma he poses, where he is an extraordinary performer at the catch point. Like he is special. His hands, his my ball mentality, the wingspan he has, how acrobatic he can be, like his ability to get his foot down when he's feet down inbounds when he's on the sideline. Like he is a catch point artist. And on the other hand, the targets, and you and I talked about this, what do you do with a guy who this whole season, I don't think he had more than 8 targets in a game, and he was targeted more by Kenny Pickett than Mitch Trubisky. And we know Pickett is the immediate future of the quarterback position in Pittsburgh, not Mitch Trubisky, but he was still not getting the targets we want to see him get, even with Pickett. And I don't know, like, can he become a better route runner and separator? What does it look like? I mean, there's a path. We saw Dez Bryant ascend to stardom without being an elite separator ever, or even a good separator. Can George Pickens be another Dez Bryant? The odds on that, I mean, we know that the guys who generally aren't good separators and can't consistently draw targets, is he Dez Bryant or is he Gabe Davis, is basically the question.
I can't, that's my favorite sentence that I've ever had anyone say to me, because I have been like, I can't wait. It's going to be like June, and I have like this Gabe, I'm working on a Gabe Davis, like Pickens. I've got 6 months to sort of land this plan, like land the perfect tweet about Gabe Davis and Pickens. The world's just not ready for that comp. But yes, I agree with you. Is he, because, and that's another one, like we just talked about Watson, and it, like, I think we know earlier than we give credit for. Like, we know, and he had a lot of sample too. Like, he had the second most routes of any rookie wide receiver behind Garrett Wilson. Like, it, that's, again, a rookie season isn't a huge sample, but in terms of rookie samples, like, it's a big, like, it tells you a lot. And we kind of know early on. Like, I've been surprised about how much we've been able to really tell, like, early on with guys that, like, you kind of get an idea of what type of player they're going to be early. And it's sticky. Like, this, some of the stuff is sticky. I just looked up the comp that you made on Dez. So in his career. Yeah. So in his career, Dez Bryant, 30.2% of his targets were actually contested targets. That's a 93rd percentile. So very contested catch centric as the position goes. Pickens last year was at 33%. So that's about 95th percentile. The difference on the targets that, so I call it an open route, which is a route that you are not thrown a contested target. So basically you strip out all of the contested targets you get and then all those routes. And then you find out what's left. How often are you targeted on those other routes? So I call it target percentage on open routes run. So that percentage, so Pickens is targeted, Pickens is targeted on 10.2 of his percent of his routes where he's not thrown a contested target. Dez Bryant was 17.6. And so Dez Bryant was like 80th percentile. Pickens is fifth. So like, that's the difference. Like, he to basically be like, and I think that's a big, and actually, like, it's incredible because Dez Bryant in his career averaged 0.45 PPR points per route run. That's double what George Pickens did this year at 0.23. So, I mean, like, it's a, that's in, almost entirely the difference. Like, what do you do on the other stuff? What do you do on the other, you know, he was targeted, Pickens was targeted on 14.5% of the targets. What do you do on the other 85%? What are you doing on those routes? I think that's going to define his trajectory. So I'm willing to stand out and be the lightning rod on George Pickens this offseason. It's going to be fun. I've learned that the dynasty community likes, it's like a lightning rod, just standing out in the middle of the field, holding it up in the middle of a lightning storm.
It's tough, man. Cause right. I mean, he has such a sexy game with those contested catches and the highlight reel stuff, but you make such a good point about some of the underlying numbers and why there's reason to be bearish on him.
Yes. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. All right, Houston.
Oh, I'm going to inject myself in this question, Jordan. Am I way too high on Damian Pierce? Because okay. I think I might be way too high on Damian Pierce. Like I just right now I'm doing a redraft, the first redraft best ball draft of 2023. And I wound up getting Damian Pierce and was pretty excited about it. In maybe like coming back latter part of the sixth round, I want to say. I thought people were getting out over their skis in him in August. And, you know, right on the eve of the season, I almost started to buy in a little bit and I had to get like one share in a redraft league. And like, I thought he totally blew away expectations, especially for a guy who was basically a part-timer in college. You know, blame Dan Mullen for probably being insane for not using him more at Florida. But man, like, I liked what I saw. I thought he ran, you know, hard with speed and power and a little bit of nuance, like more nuance than Isaiah Pacheco. Same sort of explosion, but like a little shiftier and a little bit better pass catcher, or at least more prolific. So I really like him, but I'm also not tricking myself into thinking that he is going to be competing with Rex Burkhead for snaps this year. The Texans are going to add to that running back room, you know, big free agent crop, really deep rookie class. There's going to be someone else there. How will I feel about Pierce? They're not going to turn him into Derrick Henry either. So how will I feel about Pierce in maybe a limited offense and with a sub workhorse role.
Yeah, I was just looking at the underdog ADP for the past week. He's running back 18. And that feels, again, you could sort of go into like, well, that's you could pick nits in that range. And you could maybe move him up six spots and feel comfortable, or move him down, you know, five spots and, you know, whatever. But that's not a place you feel safe about a running back. Right. And that's the, like, he got really, really high in some of his where he was ranked. He was up into I just went to Keep Trade Cut. Keep Trade Cut had him at running back 8 on October 20th. He is currently running back 16. And I think that's a cautionary tale about, you know, about pedigree, right? Because you look at guys like fourth round guys historically, about a third of them have someone drafted ahead of them the following year. Like, I think he's probably maybe lower than that. But again, he's swimming in the face of, hey, cap space team with a really good free agent class. You know what I mean? Like, that's, and even you could start connecting dots, like Damian Harris could be a guy that they might be interested in with the Patriots ties as well. You know what I mean? And that's like, I don't know if he comes in and takes his job, but competition, surely. Right. So I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. Their quarterback situation will be interesting too. I think if Davis Mills was like Zach Wilson, right? Like if Zach Wilson had basically Davis Mills's career trajectory, you'd be like, okay, like you're like, all right, like we're not, maybe we haven't hit Mahomes, but we're heading in a positive direction. But because he was drafted on day two, like it's like the Gardner Minshew thing. Like Gardner Minshew could play as well. Like he could play really well on a bad team and they're still going to draft someone ahead of him because of like what they, like what his pre-draft cost was or what his draft cost was. Like it's just going to happen. So I'm interested to see what his trajectory is of his career. Cause I think he's going to be kind of like that Minshew good backup for a while. So, all right, next up here, we've got the Indianapolis Colts.
Is this a good time to buy Indianapolis Colts receivers? And I'll limit that to Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce, who I'm sort of weirdly intrigued by. I feel like if I squint hard enough, I can see a little bit of Jordy Nelson and Alec Pierce. That might be, I know, man. I mean, that's like, Jordy is, you know, one of the greatest receivers ever for my Green Bay Packers. And that is a lofty comparison, but I do think Alec Pierce is sort of intriguing. I know he was, generated mixed feelings as a prospect, but generally, like, I thought his rookie year was a success considering what was going on at quarterback for that team. And I kind of want to buy the dip on Michael Pittman, who everyone was immensely excited about a year ago. And I think just, you know, naturally with what happened and how bad the quarterback situation was and how his yards per catch plummeted to like tight end level this past season. Like the guy still gets open and draws targets, but obviously he just wasn't able to do a lot with those targets this year, as much as they struggled at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's interesting with him, like an A dot of like a really low A dot for Michael Pittman, like bordering on like some of the other guys that people have a lot of criticisms about. Like he's below, he is at 8.6 A dot, which is very, like when I looked at that, I was like, wow, that is a surprising lack of downfield stuff. Again, the quarterback stuff is a real limiting factor to him, but when I went back and looked at the numbers, I was surprised by sort of how they were using him. Can I give you a comp for Alec Pierce that,
sure,
I think you are mature enough to handle this. How about George Pickens? They go next to each other in the draft. Very similar in their, in a lot of their rate stuff that we talked about, like a very, very similar number of like the contested catch stuff is very similar with them. You know, the reliance on sort of those contested catches. It's a very similar type of profile. And I think with Pierce, again, I think Pickens is the better player. But I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to say, like, all right, if you sort of like what Pickens does, then trade Pickens for Pierce and a lot more, right? Like, if that's the type of player that you like, that's fine. Don't do that at wide receiver 20. Do it at wide receiver 50, which is what Pierce is, right? I think that that's like, and again, I said earlier that I thought that Pierce was, I said earlier this offseason, I thought that Pickens is more like Pierce than he is like the other, like Garrett Wilson, Olave, and Drake London. Like, that's like they very much on paper look similar. So I'm interested to see sort of like, I think that's a, again, they weren't, I think you could say that Pickens was a better college player, but they went right, like they literally went next to each other in the draft. And I think that people give sort of forgive Pickens for that. And for some reasons blame Pierce, but I think it's an interesting, like just from an arbitraging profiles perspective, I think they're an interesting comp to one another.
Yeah. I'll buy that. And I mean, I know that like Pickens, there were rumors that he didn't endear himself to NFL teams during the pre-draft process, whereas mm-hmm. Pierce was sort of viewed as a college, maybe overachiever. Mm-hmm. Although I think people were certainly curious with the physical tools with Alec Pierce, the size speed combination. But yeah, I mean, like he's definitely not Christian Watson as far as taller, faster guys, but like there's definitely enough going on with Pierce athletically to keep me interested. And it wasn't a completely unproductive rookie profile, but I agree there are probably some of the same concerns with Pierce that there are with Pickens.
Yeah. Yes. Jacksonville.
Oh, what is the return of Calvin Ridley? What does that look like? Is he immediately going to go right back to being the 1,200 yard receiver we saw him be with the Falcons? Or like, I'm concerned for the downside here, Jordan. And I would still consider Christian Kirk, I think, to be the more valuable asset among Jaguars receivers. I don't know if that is a unanimous opinion in the fantasy community. Probably not. But some of the things that took Ridley away from football were sort of things that would make you question his commitment to being a football player. Like, is he serious enough about the game? And I know that's like cliche, and you know, it's easy for me to sit here and you know, a basement recording studio questioning a guy's desire and everything. And I don't like doing that with NFL players, but like, you can't ignore that this guy's career has basically been put on hold for things that easily could have been in his power, I think, to, I shouldn't say that, because I mean, I know there was sort of, you know, he cited some like mental health issues the first time before the gambling thing. But I wonder if he is going to go back to being the same, like, I don't know, fully 100% committed guy we saw come out of college and hit the ground running in the NFL.
If someone gambles on the NFL as a player, you have to, like, it is absolutely 100% fair to question their commitment. Like, put the mental health stuff aside, right? Like, that's like, that appears what it was. Like, I'm not going to get into that. Right. But like, that's, like, I hope he's all set. Like, I hope he's back and ready. Totally independent of that. Like, I have one of my groomsmen in my wedding. He was my best friend in high school. He sold tickets for the Jets. And after the Ridley thing, I called him and I was like, hey, can you walk me through, like, you know, what's the stuff on, you know, gambling? Like, are you like, and I knew, like, he doesn't have contact with players. He has no decision-making process. He's literally a salesperson of tickets. I'm not dismissing what he did, but like, it wasn't like he was like, had inside information on injuries or stuff like this. Like, he was a totally on the business side of it. And he's like, I can't. I'm like, what, like, you know, if you wanted to get into a basketball pool, right? If you wanted to bet on, yeah, Syracuse, basketball, whatever, can't do it. Like, it was, and I was impressed by how, like, it was like accepted fact. He's like, we know that. Like, we're told it all the time. We can't do it. And he's like, and I wouldn't, because I'd risk my job. And I was like, thank you. Like, that's exactly why I can't believe Calvin Ridley did. You know what I mean? Like, if, yeah, like, it's a totally fair, yeah, it would be like if I didn't, I don't know, as a lawyer, like if I didn't renew my law license, like it's something that's so obvious to what you do that you're not, that you have to do, or you're not allowed to not, you know, you it's required behavior. And he decided that there was something other than that required behavior that he wanted to do. It's totally fair. The question is commitment to it. It's been like 2 years too. It's fat. I was looking at this. It's this, there's a total split, right? ADP for underdog, he's at wide receiver 19. Christian Kirk's at 29. At for dynasty, if you go look at fantasy calc again, Christian Kirk, wide receiver 34. Calvin Ridley, wide receiver 38. So there is a market difference there, between those two guys about how the market's treating them. In fairness, Kirk's 2 years younger, so that might be some of it. But the I was surprised that the redraft community is so bullish on Calvin Ridley coming back.
Yeah, wouldn't you rather have Kirk for redraft than Ridley?
I would, especially if it's at a discount. Like, you know, I'm not sure. Like, if they come in, I would, like, if Ridley were to play a full season, I think he probably gets more targets. Right? I think he's probably the better wide receiver, but there's a lot of ifs in that statement that,
yes,
I would much rather take the discount. Yeah, I mean, so is this a team that, like, is this a team that could be in on drafting a guy too? Like, I'd be interested to see, like, they hit on Zay Jones, they hit on Christian Kirk, like, we'll see with Ridley. But on the flip side, you could come back in a year from now and be like, well, Ridley, like, we shouldn't have had concerns about Ridley. Like, Zay Jones played out of his shoes. Christian Kirk's never really been a full wide receiver one, and this offense was a disappointment. Like, I could see them being a team that they draft someone, whether it's late in the first round or in the second round, and it people be like, wow, that's actually surprising, but kind of doubling down on putting assets around Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I could see that too, especially if they choose not to re-sign Evan Engram.
Yes.
I could absolutely see that. I could see them re-signing Evan Engram and also tapping into what's apparently a pretty rich tight end class and getting like Dalton Kincaid or Sam LaPorta or one of these good pass catching tight ends coming out this year.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think about Tennessee?
Who's the quarterback going to be? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do there? I feel like they can't, I won't say can't, but probably will not run it back with Ryan Tannehill another year. And I don't think they're ready to make Malik Willis a starter after, you know, things went so poorly with him and they chose to start Josh Dobbs at the end of the season. So what are they going to do there? And, you know, hopefully I'd like to see them make an upgrade there and get a good passer and see what we can get from Treylon Burks and Chig Okonkwo. So like I'm interested in seeing them get someone who can facilitate those guys, but you know, they've got other issues too. Their offensive line stinks. Derrick Henry is not getting any younger, but quarterback, I think, is the biggest question for the Titans right now.
They could go a couple of ways. They could either just say, all right, we're going to try in one last year, like $36.6 million cap hit for Tannehill. We only save half of that if we cut him. Like, let's try and roll it back and see, like, the AFC South, you know, there's a lot of questions. We could win the AFC South and play again. But that doesn't seem like that. Again, what do you aspire to be? Do they aspire to do that, or do they aspire to be a Super Bowl team? Like, I don't think going that route gets you that close to a Super Bowl. Right, rebuilding, you know, tearing it down, whatever, probably gets you, it's more immediate pain, but that's probably the closer route to a Super Bowl than, like, they could go that route and be 5-12. Like, they could run it back with this team and be 5-12. Like, that wouldn't be, so I think it's they're a really interesting team. Do you think Tannehill has a market? Do you think if they cut him tomorrow, do you think he is he like a lesser version of Derek Carr? Like, what do you think in terms of his, what his attractiveness is on the market?
I feel like Carr is going to be a target for teams that feel like they have the infrastructure in place and have like a 2-year window. Whereas I think Tannehill is at most a 1-year bridge quarterback until you can find your guy. And maybe you're not, maybe for a team like Washington, that's not really poised to win the Super Bowl. They're not quite there, but like I could see them bringing in Tannehill to like compete with Sam Howell. And, you know, maybe be the bridge guy in case like either a high level backup or the guy who maybe makes, you know, 3 or 4 early season starts if they feel Howell isn't ready to be the week one starter. But yeah, I mean, I guess I view those guys a little differently, but you make a good point about, I don't know, maybe their hands are a little more tied because of the salary situation than we think. And maybe they don't see themselves as like a true 2023 Super Bowl contender. I mean, they were the one seed in the AFC playoffs 2 seasons ago, hard as that is to believe. But I think their infrastructure has kind of gone to seed since then. Their offensive line and their defense have gotten markedly worse. So maybe they don't feel that it's worth splurging on. Weirdly, I get this weird vibe that like somehow Derek Carr could wind up in Nashville. I just like see him being in Nashville. I don't know. Like it probably doesn't make any sense, but for some reason I can't shake the feeling like they're going to be in the running on him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, I think the Carr market could be bigger than we
yes
appreciate. By the way, when you were describing a couple of year window, like all I could think about was Atlanta. Like all I could think about was like, is that with those receiver, you know, with London and with Pitts? I don't know how high Carr elevates anybody, but like that, if you're going to put him in a spot with a couple of young playmakers and you're like, hey, we could actually do damage because this division's pretty bad. Yeah, that's all I could think about. All right, Denver.
What does the Javonte Williams comeback look like? I mean, there was so much enthusiasm for him going into last season. And, you know, he was finally free of the Melvin Gordon shadow, or, you know, was going to get the increased usage, I should say. Not usage befitting the talents. And then he got hurt. So I'm still pretty bullish. I don't know if that's wise. I'm maybe a little too bullish in Dynasty. But I still think there's RB1 potential here. Like just watching the guy play, I've never had any question about his talent. Is he still the same guy after the injury, and what sort of role does Denver have for him in 2023?
Yeah. Running back 13 in Dynasty at Fantasy Calc, and then Underdog has him at 17. So it's interesting. By the way, it's interesting when you look at Breece Hall is at 7, Javonte Williams at 17. That's a big split based on where, you know, Hall was really good, but both coming off an injury. Javonte Williams was ahead of him coming into the season. Like that's an interesting split if you're sort of trying to bet on guys coming back in initial sort of redraft type decision making processes. Kansas City, defending champion Kansas City, what do you think their offseason looks like?
Good question. I think they're going to make some changes at wide receiver, and that raises my biggest question, and I have no idea how to answer this. What is Kadarius Toney for Dynasty? Like I'm so, and I've got him on a couple of rosters, Jordan, and I do not know what to make of this guy. Twitchy, extraordinary, exceptional athlete, major playmaker, and we saw it in the Super Bowl. He has a touchdown catch. He has really, like, I think the punt return was kind of the pivotal play of the game. You know, not only giving Kansas City the ball back in good field position, but basically, like, here you're going to score a touchdown again. You're at the 5-yard line or whatever it was. But he played, I think, I haven't seen the snap counts from the Super Bowl, but from the time they traded for him, I think he played more than 20 offensive snaps only once. Is he going to be like, he's in the right spot. He's got Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback. He's got Andy Reid, the mad scientist, drawing up ways to use him. I couldn't think of a better coach for Kadarius Toney to have, but just like, are we going to ever get a 1,000-yard season out of this guy, or is it just going to be part-time usage and more soft tissue injuries?
Are we ever going to get 17 games out of him?
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, soft tissue injuries.
I'll take double digits.
this guy's soft tissue is much softer than average. Just give this guy like a 6 or 7 game stretch of good health. I just want to see what that looks like.
96th percentile yards per route run in his career, 2.12. Targets per route run, 25.8% of his routes he's been targeted on. That's 96th percentile. That's actually incorrect. That was it's 97th percentile for yards per route run and 98th percentile for targets per route run.
I want to say in one of their playoff games, maybe the Jacksonville game or something, there was some game where he ran 11 routes and was targeted on 7 of them.
Correct.
The guy just gets open, man. Yes. It's crazy.
And when you look at actually his points per route run, so I have some in my system, I have some filters. So I grade it by how many routes you've run and all this stuff, just so that way I'm not getting a bunch of noise about guys that have run a couple of routes. Like, it's astonishing how few routes he's run. Like, it's well below, he's run less than 300 routes in his career. Like, it's really, really low for a 2-year, for him being in his second season. So we'll see. Like, again, it's intoxicating because it's very productive on a per route basis, but it's just
right. He's the Trey Lance of wide receivers. He's the mystery box guy.
Like, yes.
we know like the raw tools are like spectacular, but let's see it. I just want to see it.
Absolutely. And when you look at like, he was in that range we talked about with Elijah Moore, he was down at wide receiver 40. So in that Smith-Schuster, Ridley's in that range, Lockett, Sutton, Gabe Davis, like, it's an interesting, like, that's the bet from there that you could be like, okay, this could be, a top 6 guy in a season. It's just, is he capable of sort of handling that? All right, Vegas.
What are they going to do at running back? I don't think they're going to re-sign Josh Jacobs. And, this is probably a good year to basically have an empty backfield, sort of. And I shouldn't say totally empty. I mean, maybe Zamir White has some sort of future. We didn't really get to see much of that guy. But, he was a sort of hard-charging, rugged inside runner at Georgia, and maybe he can have some sort of role on a committee, but they could go any which way if they don't sign Josh Jacobs. And I kind of think they probably won't, since a big investment at running back doesn't seem like it would be the most prudent way for the Raiders to go. What do they stock the cupboards with as far as free agency and the rookie class? Because I think that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting, like, that offensive line can run block. So assuming they find a suitable solution at quarterback, I think that could be a good landing spot for a free agent or rookie wide running back, or both. It's possible they sign someone and draft someone. And I think that's a pretty good landing spot for a running back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they think about Zamir White. They have a surprising, given how much they're paying Adams, given how much they're paying like Waller, like, I'm surprised that they, like, if they cut Carr, they would have like almost $50 million. They would have, basically $50 million in cap space. Again, is a certain quarterback that's in a dark, undisclosed room right now as we're recording this, is that sort of take up a bunch of that cap space? Like, I think that those rumors aren't going to go away. If you had to bet right now, who would you say is their week one starting quarterback?
Oh, wow, that's a good one. I don't think it's going to be Stidham. I think it's going to be some retread. I think it'll be like Ryan Tannehill,
okay,
or Carson Wentz. Like, I think they'll just try to like spackle that position for 1 year and like maybe put themselves. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see them like going all in on Aaron Rodgers. I just kind of don't picture that.
Got it. Yeah, I'm this team, the direction, what do they aspire to be? It's really an interesting question with them.
Yeah, like the Jets, I mean, like Aaron Rodgers makes more sense for the Jets. They just need the quarterback. Their defense is terrific. Offensive line and weapons good enough. They just need that piece, that key piece, the queen on the chessboard. The Raiders need more than that. They're not a Super Bowl team. So going all in on Rodgers, I don't know if that makes sense. But, you know, then again, the Raiders do a lot of things as an organization that don't really make that much sense.
That's true. If Baltimore tags Lamar Jackson and Vegas calls and says, we'll give you the 7th pick in the draft, who says no?
Wow. I think Baltimore would say no, because I think they have Super Bowl aspirations, and I think that sets the timetable back for them.
Got it. I think that's fair.
I'm not sure about that, though, Jordan. That's a really interesting question.
Yeah. It's a, what do they, like, I think there's a couple of questions about, like, what do you aspire to be that are really interesting in the AFC?
Yes.
Because you can, if you're, don't think your window's open, like, there's a couple of moves that you could make that could really say, like, and again, if you're not, if you don't have elite ranges of outcomes, like, I wonder what you're, like, if you're just, if you're in a Mahomes is an alien era of the AFC, and you don't have a way to match that, right? Like, Derek Carr doesn't make sense, right? I actually think Vegas makes a really good decision, like saying, listen, we can't win. Whatever our ceiling is, like, it's not high enough with Derek Carr. Like, we just can't. Like, again, he's a good player. I think he's a good person, all those things. But we can't contend with Mahomes with him. Right. Like, so either let's kick the can on contending right now and figure out a rebuild, or, you know, we have to have some other option that can elevate us. Right. It's a totally, you know, and I wonder what Baltimore thinks. Like, I wonder what some of these teams think about where they are from a directional contending standpoint, because there's a lot of moves that could be made. All right. Last one here. We've got the, Chargers.
Yeah, hard team to find interesting dynasty angles on, but I think for me the one, and I imagine most Justin Herbert stakeholders are perfectly content to have him anchoring super flex rosters, but I do wonder if Justin Herbert is ever going to be a truly great quarterback, or if he's merely going to be above average. Like, the tools, this guy's got arm talent galore, mobility, great head of hair, everything going for him, really. But, like, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar. And I was kind of one of the few people, I think, who had Joe Burrow ranked ahead of him last offseason. I just, like, saw, I don't know, to my eye, I just always kind of thought Burrow was better. I thought the arm was a little crisper as far as, like, ball placements. And, I mean, like, Herbert... Weirdly, I mean, I was super high on Herbert coming out of that Thursday night early season game against the Chiefs, where he was terrific in that game, and he gutted it out when he sustained that, I think they called it broken rib cartilage, or
yeah.
It was a weird injury. And Lord knows he was not at 100% probably a month or more after that. So I'm not going to, like, hold some of the drab numbers, the 17 fantasy points per game against him. Like, I think there's still a really lofty ceiling potentially here, but I'm not sure if it's a mirage or not. Like, I'm not sure if he's really that guy, if he's, like, got Burrow level greatness in him, or if he's just going to be one of these guys who, like, yeah, he's pretty good. So I'm not quite sure how to assess the dynasty value of Justin Herbert.
It's interesting. I wonder, like, there's some rumblings that they might move on from Keenan Allen. I don't know if that makes a ton of sense without backfilling it. Like, I thought they were an interesting team to have drafted a receiver last year, right? They, because all of a sudden they look a little old at receiver, right? You've got Mike Williams, who, you know, is banged up this year. You have Keenan Allen, who, despite, you know, a good despite being injured, was a top 12 wide receiver in points per game, right? Like, it was like he was good, but like all of a sudden, like the pieces here are looking old, and so I wonder like what the next generation is around him, and if that can, you know, they need, I think, just another explosive play. They don't really have an explosive playmaker. they kind of have a lot of what the criticisms are with that offense is like, okay, well, what did you really we don't have a vertical game, we don't, the offensive coordinator does too much short stuff, they don't really unleash Herbert. Well, exactly how was this team constructed to do that, right? Is the interesting, like, you know, who's the player that's going to sort of unleash what he can do well with some of the vertical stuff? And it's like, I don't know, like Mike Williams isn't really that guy. Like,
you know, right.
They've had some success with, like, you know, like a deep threat like Jalen Guyton at points, but like they don't really have a guy that does that. And I'm interested to see, like, I don't know if that's in this draft class or not. But, you know, is this a team that figures out a way to sort of take him to the next level with some talent around him?
Yeah, I'd love to see the Chargers draft Zay Flowers. I think he would be a fun tool for Herbert to work with, a guy who's got some deep speed and some, run after the catch ability. And I know, like, the knock on him is that he's tiny. But, hey, if you're going to be throwing a tiny receiver out there, at least let it be someone who can make plays and not DeAndre Carter, who I think played far more offensive snaps than the Chargers were hoping that he was going to play this year.
Absolutely. Like, he's like Herbert's almost like the test case of what happens when you extend a quarterback, have to pay him a ton, and then take all his weapons away. Like, that's not, yes. they haven't paid him yet, but they took, like, he basically spent almost all season without his, like, a full complement of weapons. And it's like, okay, like that's kind of like proof of concept that it's harder than we give credit for. So, well, Pat, thank you for, we went a little over an hour. I told you I'd keep you an hour. We went a little over it. My apologies for that, but this is awesome and a good conversation with you. I'm super happy that you, we do the home and home. Hope to have you back on this off season as well. I'm trying to do more guests this off season. So, you know, you're one that I like talking to, so we will hopefully be able to bring you back. Go ahead. And if you want to pitch your anything that you have to pitch in terms of where people can find you and the like.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Jordan. Always love talking to you. Always glad to do this home and home. And I'm glad we get the next 5 or 6 months to work on answering some of these questions instead of just asking them at this early point in the offseason. So people can find my work at fantasypros.com. They can get me on Twitter at Fitz_FF. And, catch me on the Fitz on Fantasy podcast and the Fantasy Pros Dynasty podcast.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. And that'll do it for this edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.